All right. Welcome, everybody, to a very disturbing version of Security Guy Elite. Security Guy Radio. No, Security Guy TV now. Sorry, on live stream. With my guest, Lori Ibrahim. How are you?
I'm hanging in, Chuck. How are you?
Now, we're going to talk about medical kidnapping today, and I want to get right into this with people because people hear medical kidnapping, they go, that's a term I've never heard. And I must say, when I started doing the research on this show, I was amazed at how much information there is about it. So explain it to us, you know, in your words, just kind of a person that wouldn't understand it. Explain what medical kidnapping is.
Well, medical kidnapping can entail many different things. It can entail a baby being taken from his or her mother out of the hospital because either the baby or the mother tested positive for some sort of substance, or family brings in their three-year-old who has a fractured wrist, and some child abuse specialist within the hospital decides that there was no other way the child could have been injured other than the parent abusing that child. Medical kidnap involves a child being removed from their parents for some sort of medical reason, either failure to thrive or injuries or drug exposure. And usually in most cases, the allegations are false, but hospitals have now many, many physicians who are trained to look for signs of abuse. They're actually called child abuse specialists, and they're almost like hawks in the sense where they're looking for any sort of case that could be applied and could be then turned into Child Protective Services.
Now, not a bad thing, by the way.
Not necessarily, as long as there's no overreach. A lot of times doctors overlook organic reasons and truly medical reasons. For instance, many babies and young children suffer from brittle bone disease and may present with multiple healed fractures on a skeletal survey, and it's automatically assumed that the parent must have been beating the child and abusing the child when really the child has a medical deficiency that is causing these injuries. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just when it's overzealously used, it can lead to children being wrongfully removed from innocent parents.
Now, my daughter says I talk too much on the show. All right? I get it. All right? But that's only because I fear dead air. We're not going to have any dead air today, but let me tell you what I know about it. So okay. When I was a cop, we had, you know, Child Protective Services. That's what it was called, I think. And we had, you know, PET teams, psychological evaluation teams. And if you came to a home as a police officer, you had full rights and authority under the law to say, you know what? You're coming with me, pal, and we're going to put you in a soda bed, they called it, foster home. And then the social workers came out, worked with the family. And the idea was we're going to reunite the family. Mm-hmm. And that was always the idea, right? And, you know, I would say not every time I called somebody about that did they take the child out of the home. There's the obvious signs, like this idiot I had, that we went to the hospital and he had taken his two-year-old who was, you know, getting too close to the stove, and a teacher molesting decided to take his palms and hold them down on an open oven door and give him third-degree burns, and I almost C-clamped that guy. But that's extreme. This is just, you know, one person's version of neglect is another person's version of, wow, you mean you have diapers? I don't have diapers. You mean you didn't get them changed, but I don't have any diapers for my kids at all, right? So that's subjective to a degree. But now it's changing. I did a lot of research, and I got to tell you, I'm no conspiracy theory guy, but if you Google medical kidnapping or medicalkidnap.com, which we'll show when we talk about you on you know, on your close-up, there's a lot of data on this where it seems to me, either through complete incompetence on one side, which is very likely, or if you want to go to the other side on a big, giant conspiracy, a lot of kids are being taken out and parents aren't given rights to even say, you know what, I got some other evidence that shows that's not what happened. Am I describing this properly?
Oh, absolutely. Parental rights, parents' constitutional rights are completely ignored and trampled within the juvenile dependency court system.
All right. Let's tell your story, you know, just as it unrolled. And we're going to show some documents later because I did a lot of research and found documents. So go ahead and tell us, you know, kind of how this happened.
Well, I gave birth to my second son in July of 2016, last year. I was already the very happy mother of one son who was 4 years old, almost five at the time. And everything with my second pregnancy was identical to my first.
By the way, was it the same doctor?
No.
Okay.
I was going to clarify, everything was identical with the exception of different insurance and different physician.
Okay.
With my first son, I had private insurance. I gave birth at Cedars-Sinai. With my second son that I gave birth to last year, I had Kaiser insurance and then Medi-Cal, and I gave birth at a Kaiser facility. With both pregnancies, I experienced very painful, degenerating fibroid pain and was prescribed hydrocodone, which is a narcotic pain medicine.
Right.
This was prescribed by the OB.
By both doctors, by the way.
Yes.
Both pregnancies.
Both pregnancies. Right. And my first son in 2011 was born completely healthy. There were no withdrawals, no symptoms of anything. And he was actually born a month early. So you would think a child born a month early would be more prone to spend some time in the NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit. But my first son never did. He went home with me as scheduled.
Okay.
Whereas my second son, as soon as I came out of the general anesthesia, which that was also something different. My first child, I was not put all the way under. I was
epidural?
Kept awake.
Okay.
And they just did, you know, where they numb you from the chest down, right, and they cut you open and you're awake. With Kaiser, they put me under general anesthesia. When I came to and was handed my beautiful, healthy second son, I figured it would be the same thing as my first son, that we would stay in the hospital for a couple of days and I would go home and my husband and I would pick up my first child who was with his paternal family. But almost immediately, hours after giving birth to my son, doctors started coming into my room.
Now, by the way, were these your attending physicians or new doctors?
I've never met these doctors before
okay,
in my
where
life.
Was your, where was your OBGYN, I guess? Where was he?
The OB that actually performed the cesarean, who had treated me during most of my pregnancy, he was gone.
And prescribed the medicine, by the
way.
And
prescribed the
okay,
medicine,
right.
Yes. I gave birth on a Friday, and he was not seen again. And every single doctor that came in after him was one that I had never before met, never before spoken to. And the first pediatrician that came to me came in very accusatorily. Everyone that came to see me was almost an interrogation. He said, "You tested positive for opiates, and
you personally,
and your baby's going to go through withdrawals, and he's going to need methadone." And I said, "Are you crazy? This healthy baby that is nursing right now, this is who you're talking about?" And after that, in the following mornings, I had a hospital social worker in my room. I had an addiction specialist doctor. I had a psychiatrist. And then at the end of this whole parade of strange physicians interrogating me about drug usage and my whole history of my life, then a DCFS social worker came to my room.
Okay, now, let's get this straight, because this is a little confusing to people.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Department of Children and Family Services.
Yes.
That's Los Angeles County.
Yes.
Not Los Angeles City.
No, Angeles County, which is
Los
huge.
County. Okay. All
yes.
Right. Okay. Let's make sure we get that straight. That's the organization we're dealing with on this.
Yes.
Okay.
Los Angeles County Department of Children and Family Services. I have received a call, and most of what I'm going to say, I did not learn until after I picked up my medical records. So
okay.
I did
That's
not
fine.
Know who called them or what was going on. But it turned out that one of the social workers from Kaiser called LA County DCFS to report that I had tested positive for drugs.
Now, that doesn't sound surprising since you were prescribed drugs.
Right.
And I'm no doctor, and I did play one at UCLA once, but that's a different story. But I'm assuming that if the doctor prescribes this drug, he knows what he's doing.
Right.
Right? It's legal, I suppose.
Right.
And you tested positive. So you weren't surprised by that.
No.
Right? So what were you surprised by? Besides these people showing up saying you tested positive, well, yeah, I know. That's what I think is medically okay because my doctor said so, right?
Right.
So what's the part that you really just didn't get the connection to? Why why do they jump from you tested positive, therefore
we're now calling, we're making a child abuse referral for you.
By the way, I was just baffled.
And
by the way, sorry, Megan, I got to put this in here. When you do your pre-op, and I've been to the hospital several times, the boy, do they poke you and stick you and look at you and look under the hood and say, okay, and take your blood. And they knew you were testing positive before you went into the birth.
Yes.
Why didn't somebody say, oh, wait, stop, we have to have a special unit there, a special delivery? That's a little weird, but go ahead.
Yeah, they actually, in my medical records, had a drug test that was done on me without my knowledge in April of 2016. So months before I gave birth in July. And that test yielded the exact same results.
Okay.
And nobody ever questioned me or talked to me about it. And so when the DCFS social worker came to my room, and by this point, again, this is barely 24 hours after major surgery. I'm trying to rest and nurse and bond with my newborn.
Right.
I had just been harassed by a psychiatrist and a drug doctor and a medical social worker. And by the time this DCFS social worker came to my room, I had no interest in talking to her or being cooperative with her. I did record most of the conversation. I had one of my family members on speakerphone, and I was shocked that I was being questioned in any way. I had been a mother for almost 5 years. I had been a teacher for over 15 years.
Yes, let's talk about that. Let's digress. I'm sorry, folks. I get these things out of sequence sometimes.
That's okay.
What district?
I taught for the Philadelphia Public School System back east in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Out here in California, I have taught for multiple private schools, preschools, religious schools. I actually worked at a group home for the Los Angeles Youth Network with homeless and runaway teenagers. I've worked as a nanny, as a tutor, as a camp counselor.
So you know a little bit about reporting child abuse and neglect and things to the services because you're involved in that.
I'm horrified at how little I knew as a mandated reporter all those years. I knew nothing about DCFS or CPS or whatever acronym they choose to use in whatever state. I just know that, thankfully, looking back on my past as a teacher, I never encountered any children that I felt the need to make a referral. I did not have any children that were being abused or neglected. Looking back now, I think to myself, I had some very poor students, and could someone have seen that as neglect? Oh, they don't have a school bag, or they don't have a pencil, or their shoes are torn. Maybe somebody would have turned that into neglect, but being poor is not a crime.
Right. So the Department of Child Family Services, LA County, shows up in your room.
Yes.
And says what?
She told me that she had been told that I tested positive for opiates.
Been told?
By the hospital.
Okay. I mean, doesn't she have to review some records or something, or she just...
Well, she claimed in her report later that she was unable to get my records, but I emailed them to her that day, and I have proof of that email.
There's a punchline coming here, and you're going to... Just hold on 1 second. So, okay. So, this, you know, by the way, this all sounds normal. Sounds like something I would do if I was a police officer and I got called to the hospital and said, oh, we got this person tested positive, and I'd say, well, it's a prescription. Yeah, well, does that mean it's child neglect or endangerment per se? If the doctor knows what he's doing, why don't we charge the doctor, right? I would look at this and question it a lot. So far, it all sounds normal. So far, I don't see them doing anything, you know, that they wouldn't do. They want to be concerned, right? Now it starts to digress. Now the story starts to go south. So tell us how all of a sudden it goes from, okay, you're asking some questions, I'm cooperating. How does it take a dive?
She told me that they just needed to, and again, I have this recorded also.
Yeah.
She said, we just needed to kind of figure out what was going on and if you were using this medication with a prescription or if it's something that you were using illegally. And I said, okay, here's my medical records. I can email them
to
you. They're right here.
And this is a Kaiser doctor, by the way. And it's a Kaiser record who prescribed the medicine to you.
Yes, everything's within their system.
So
they could pull it right up on
on
the computer. And she spoke to my husband. She spoke to me. She asked if I would take another drug test for her. And I said, well, I just had general anesthesia. So until you have my medical records in your hand with a list of every medication they've given me, No, I'm not going to do a drug test for you. They just drug tested me yesterday.
Well,
I'm in the hospital.
But then she'd come to you and say, I have information that you tested positive. What should you need another drug test for?
Exactly.
Apparently they had it.
Right. All well, right. The county makes a lot of money from making parents do these things. So she told me that as long as everything checked out with my medical records, that she would not be back.
Okay. And this is day two. Day two, okay.
He was born July 8th, and this was July 9th.
All right.
He was born on a Friday. This was a Saturday when the social worker came from Los Angeles County. And I was told that as long as everything checked out with the medications, there was no reason for her to come back.
Okay. So far, I'm hearing normal. Sounds good so far. All right.
The next day, the 10th, one thing that also struck me as very odd, the hospital staff was in a huge rush for me to fill out the birth certificate information. They rushed me. And I remember with my first son at Cedars-Sinai, where I was treated like a human being and I was treated like a new mother, there was no rush. They said, well, if you get this back to us before you're discharged, it's fine. Kaiser Hospital wanted that back from me immediately.
All right.
Immediately. And she came to me on the 10th.
Now, she is
the emergency response child social worker, yes, from DCFS.
All right, DCFS, okay.
And before she came, I believe it was a nurse who came and basically took my newborn off my breast, made up some story about they needed to take him for something. And the social worker arrived with hospital security and a few photocopied pieces of paper. It was, I guess, a removal order, but it was not complete. It was pages. It said it was 10 pages. She only handed me pages 6 through 10. I didn't see pages 1 through 5. So there were no actual allegations on these pages. I had no idea what I was looking at or why my baby was being taken away from me. And I was being told that I had a court date 3 days later and that both of my children were going to be removed from my care.
Now, this was like a court order or what we call a writ of habeas corpus, which is like a warrant kind of.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of paperwork did you think it was? Did you think it was a court order or what?
I honestly have never seen anything like it before, so I didn't have any idea what I was looking at.
And just so you know, and just so our viewers know, one of the things that a police officer has authority to, and social workers do to some degree, is if I think there's something wrong with the kid, I can come in your house, I don't need a warrant, I can go in the bedroom, I can take your child, I can put him in a foster home until we figure it all out. That's for severe cases, of course, right? So far, I'm still hearing normal, mostly.
Right.
You know, St. John's bugged the crap out of me about the birth certificate, but I never let my kid leave the room. That really made him mad. He never went to the nursery, right? Neither one of them. So I'm still hearing normal so far, okay? And you're kind of telling this in chronological order so our viewers can understand kind of how it lays out, right?
Right.
So they take your child. You think it seems legal, although you're disagreeing.
Oh, I didn't think it seemed legal at all.
Oh, you didn't think? Okay.
No.
I mean,
no.
I could see that. I could see what you would. But it to me and to somebody that knows the stuff, so far it seems, you know, maybe something's there. Doesn't sound crazy yet. Now, they take your child. Tell me why it's crazy. Because you and I, when you showed me this document, I went, what? That doesn't make any sense. Tell me why it's crazy. Now, we're going to fast forward and come back, but you tell the viewers why this is actually crazy.
Well, the ER worker who came to my hospital room on July 9th and July 10th never once visited my home. She did not investigate my home. She did not ask to see my home. No investigation was done whatsoever, but she wrote in her report that she met with me in my home. It says on July 10th that the ERCSW met with mother in her home and mother became visibly agitated upon seeing her.
Now, is that one of the documents? I read it, and I read some others, by the way. Is that one we have to show?
Yes. Right. I don't know if we have it in your computer, but I have it in front of me.
All right. What's the one you gave me to pull up on the graphic? What was that one?
Those are the allegations that were actually filed against me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's very difficult to see these things on the screen, but I will say to the viewers that I read that order and I read the language, and it reads like, I came to her house and I spoke to her and I looked at the conditions and I determined that she had all these issues and problems and then I took the kid. And it all says home, 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 but you're in the hospital. Mm-hmm. That's a little crazy. That's right. The crazy part. Right?
I was in the hospital hooked up to IVs. Right. I mean, nobody ever came to my home, excuse me, before seizing my newborn. Nobody investigated
in the hospital.
My home.
She was taken from the hospital.
Right.
Now, the other punchline in this, and we're gonna kind of go forward a little bit and keep chronologically going, is that I also reviewed and by the way, I don't know if it's okay with you, but if anybody wanted to see it, they could email me. Could we send it
sure.
to them? All right. So we'll talk about that later if you guys want to get a copy. But I read it. And the other thing I saw was the, you know, baby. Your baby's name, I'm not going to say it. You know, they poke you. They take some blood. They, you know, wrap you up. And then they do a test and they write it up. And what I read was the baby was fine. Tested negative for drugs.
Yeah.
Healthy baby. No medical conditions.
Completely healthy.
Nothing.
Baby.
There wasn't anything on that report from Kaiser.
Right.
Okay. And that's what would happen if they took a child and brought him to the nursery and they found something wrong. Of course, they write up, you know, his umbilical cord is crooked or whatever they put on there. They do something, right? And what I read about yours is normal kid.
Yeah.
Right. So there's punchline number two. So punchline number one is I got a document that says she came to your home and she didn't come to your home.
No.
And I have a contradictory document that says the baby's healthy and the baby did not test positive for a drug.
Not one.
So what are you putting the baby on methadone for?
Oh, they...
See what I'm saying? So right there, this is where it all goes sideways,
yeah.
right? So let's get back on your story. They take your child out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens next?
The police showed up, Harbor City Police.
After the child was taken?
After the child. He's already out of my room.
Okay. And you don't know where he is. He's just gone.
I was told that he was put in the NICU because that's where they put babies on hospital holds. When the county
NICU.
Takes a baby, they put the baby, healthy or not,
healthy
in
not,
the
okay.
NICU.
All right.
Because
all right.
that's where they hold them. I guess
it's
very secure.
It's very secure usually.
Right.
right. Okay. All right.
And the police were there. And again, I have this recorded. And I showed the police the paperwork that the social worker gave me. And the police were even concerned and confused because they said, well, this doesn't have a seal. It looks like it's been stamped and not signed. You're missing pages. And there was also the big question of why were they not letting our newborn go home with my husband?
That makes sense.
My husband asked, if you think there's a problem with the mom, there's no problem with me.
Right.
Let me take my son.
Now, why did they bring the police on this? Now, I have been called to those sort of things because if it rises to a criminal charge,
right.
then I'm the one that writes the report. Concurrent with the social worker's report. And it just depends on the jurisdiction, how they handle it. That may be a procedural thing. Did the police, I don't know, interview you, take a report about it, or were they there to keep the peace? What was their role, do you think?
I honestly don't know.
All right.
I mean, I've heard before of social workers coming with the police, you know, to someone's home or to the hospital. But I honestly don't know who called the police or why.
But they didn't
there
arrest
no,
you.
No.
And
no.
you've had no criminal charges brought
I've
against you?
I've never been arrested in my life.
Okay. And this didn't result in some criminal court hearing, right?
No.
So maybe they were there just to keep
I was
the peace.
Threatened with that. When the social worker visited me in my hospital room the first time on July 9th, she asked me where my older son was. And I said, he's with his paternal family. He goes to visit
your first husband
every other weekend.
Okay.
I was never married to him, just so you know.
Oh, the okay.
First.
Your play husband. All right.
But he had visitation. I had 100% legal and physical custody of
okay.
my older son, and he was on a normally scheduled visit. The social worker said, I need that address. And I said, I'm not telling you
yeah.
where he is. And she threatened me, and she said if I did not disclose the address, that she would have me arrested.
Yes, this is because she came to your home and did this whole
right.
investigation.
Right.
So she has to, I guess she forgot about that in her report. And now she has to say, I got to find him.
Right.
It all stinks so far, I got to tell you. Right.
Well, she said, I need the address of where he is or I'm going to arrest you. And I went like this and I said, then arrest me. I'm
yeah,
not telling you where
don't,
he
you
is.
Don't call blood. I mean, they, again, I'm rusty on this and maybe you guys can send me an email, but I think they have authority to do that. But usually they have the police do it because they don't have handcuffs in a jail to put you in.
Right.
Right. So maybe this sounds like it could be an intimidation.
Oh, definitely.
And this is no knock against
yeah.
the police, by the way.
No.
Because as you know, fellow officers, we get called for all kinds of stuff that's none of our business.
Right.
And, you know, people try to use this for things. So I'm not blaming the cops on that one. So, and they were smart enough to say, okay, everything's good. I'm out. See you later. Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now what happens next?
Well, the police
leave.
The police were there. They looked over the paperwork. They said that if the social worker had already left, they may not be able to enforce it.
Yeah. It sounds like they didn't think that was some sort of...
They didn't really understand what was going on either or why the baby was
legal
being
writ.
Held from
yeah.
me. Yeah.
Okay.
But...
And I got to tell you, what normally happens in that case is the cops are called to write a crime report because, mm-hmm. you know, if you're shooting heroin in your stomach, that's a crime.
Right.
And according to you, they didn't do it. No reports?
No report
yeah.
that I know of. I mean, I've never
been charged
with anything.
And you're sitting
here
on the show, so you'd be in jail
right.
if you were. So, okay.
I was given a court date, I was given paperwork, and I was discharged from the hospital.
And this is day three, though?
He was born on the 8th, so this was the 10th. This was day two.
Oh, 2 days, all right.
And I had spent with my first son, four days after the cesarean. I had not yet done any of the things you're supposed to really be doing before you're discharged from the hospital, but Kaiser wrote down that I had. I had not, you know, gone to the bathroom all the ways you can go to the bathroom
oh, yeah.
and all those things.
Did you have a C-section?
I had major surgery.
Yeah. I mean, with our kids, they had my wife up and walking mm-hmm. in hours. I mm-hmm. mean, they get a test due and all that kind of stuff. But she
right.
was, you know, we had private insurance. She was still kind of, you know, kicked out kind of maybe 2 days, 3 days at the most probably. You know?
Right.
So, you know, so far, and this is no offense to you, but so far it's you know, it's kind of what
well,
they
I
do,
was given the option.
Now, if they falsified documents and said, oh, yeah, she did all those things, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, and they did,
yeah,
because
right.
it wasn't true. But they asked me, and they also lied and said that I demanded to be discharged. I never demanded. I was offered, would you like us to discharge you now? And I had to really quickly think to myself, okay, my goodness, it's Sunday. My baby was just kidnapped. My almost 5-year-old is at his biological father's house. I have to run around and do all this stuff before this court date. I said, sure, discharge me, because I thought I could get more done out
yeah,
of the hospital.
I mean, in their notes, you know, and you can provide those if you want to, it would say, you know, discharged against our medical advice.
Right, and it doesn't say that.
It doesn't say that,
no.
Okay. It doesn't say it, all right.
And so they discharged me, and I mean, of course, immediately
oh, by the, way,
the first thing.
Just curious, where's your husband when this is going on? Is
he was there.
He's
was
in the
with me.
He's in the room, he's mm-hmm. watching. I saw some videos. Oh, by the way, that website is medicalkidnap.com.
Yes.
And that website is not your website.
No.
But I thought I would put it up because it did have me put up the graphic here so we can see it. It had not only your case.
Many others.
A whole bunch of cases yeah. on there. It's kind of made me intrigued by this story. Okay.
Yeah.
So your husband's there, and then you guys leave.
And
right?
he asked the hospital social worker, he said, what about me? And her response was, what about you? I mean, literally in that tone of voice,
right.
what about you? And she just kept saying, the best thing to do is cooperate with them. Just cooperate. Just cooperate. And so, because I still really knew nothing about this organization, I thought, okay, it's July 10th. We have some sort of hearing on July 13th. I'm going to walk in there with all of my evidence.
Oh, they give a hearing that fast, 3 days.
They have to,
okay,
yeah.
All right.
And it's not really a hearing that I came to learn, but I thought it was going to be, and I thought that I would have a chance to show my evidence. And
well, let's not
get
off.
Be dropped.
Yeah, let's go back a little bit. So mm-hmm. you guys are out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You have 3 days before the hearing. Did they ever come to your house? Did they ever find your other son?
Never. They never came to my house.
Before the hearing, they never did?
Never.
Okay, all right.
No. And I never picked up my older son because I had called him and told his father and grandmother, please keep him safe. This is what happened with DCFS. They took his baby brother, and I did not give them your address. I don't want them to find him. I instructed them, you know, just please keep my son safe. Well, they never liked the fact that I had full custody, so they spoke to the attorney that I beat for custody back in 2012,
right.
and he advised them to use the situation to their advantage.
Well, I mean, that happens. It's a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see that happening. All right.
So,
do you think that they had something to do with this notification of the hospital?
In all of the records, it shows that Kaiser made the initial call, but many people have asked me that.
Yeah.
Many, many people have asked. You're not the first.
Right.
And they are a very, very wealthy family. So
we're not accusing anybody.
I'm definitely not accusing.
Know,
yeah. No, I'm simply saying I don't know.
All right.
Don't have solid facts one way or the other. After 9 months of this, I do have solid facts that they have been given preferential treatment, despite the fact that my older son's biological father has a very lengthy criminal record and did not have any kind of custody whatsoever. They have been treated like gold throughout this entire
thing. Different story, another show.
Yes.
I think, all right.
Yes, definitely.
So let's get back to the hearing. So now you guys go home. You're saying, what happened? What's going on?
I mean, I just gave birth. I was just nursing. I was expecting to go home.
You got a C-section. You're walking around with stitches, and you got to be in court in 3 days.
Yes, that's and it. I ran around for those 3 days.
Sure. Did you have to hire an attorney?
Well, we spoke to one. We spoke to one, and he had a lot of experience with DCFS, and his retainer was very, very high. We got some very good information from him. I got all of my medical records. I got my baby's medical records. I had photographs of my home, photographs of my older son, proof that he had been in school. I had every bit of evidence you could possibly bring with you into a court to show that I was a competent, capable, loving, educated parent.
But you didn't go with an attorney, though. You got advice, but you went by yourself.
Right. I was represented by a court-appointed attorney,
as
well as my husband, which is very interesting because that's what they do with married couples. They give the husband and the wife their own court-appointed attorney as opposed to just one. You're a unit.
That's interesting.
But they give you because what they end up trying to do is separate you.
Yeah, and you don't have to breach the marital privilege if you don't want to and say anything.
Right.
So they just automatically do this and assume you're going to squeal on the other parent or something.
Well, and they were trying to get him to
entire time. You know, I mean, I'm not going to fault them completely for that, although it is a little dirty pool kind of, you know. I mean, and by the way, if there was a mama bear, papa bear relationship, one of those parents would rat the other one out.
Right.
Unfortunately, what we find in this business, in this type of thing, is that there is one parent that's the mama bear, papa bear, and the other parent's like, right? Or one parent is abused and the other parent's like, And then you don't get any reporting, and they let it happen.
Right.
Not your case, of course.
Right.
All right, so you're in court. You have a court appointed. Now, but when you say court appointed, let's talk about the court. Is this, you know, the judge with the robe and the gavel, and it looks like people's court, or is this an office building and a couple of folding chairs and looks worse than my set? I mean, what's going on? Where do you go?
It's called Edelman's Children's Court. It's on a hill in Monterey Park.
Okay. They call it a court, all right?
They call it a court. It's really not. It really is just, it's for show.
I mean, are the people that hear your case, are they actual court bench judges?
No, mine was a commissioner.
Commissioner, okay. I don't like that already. That doesn't...
Yeah, no, mine was a commissioner. Right. And we were told to be there at 8:30 in the morning. Now, when you mentioned the methadone, like I said, my baby was born on July 8th, totally healthy. July 9th, his medical records show he's totally healthy.
I saw that document, by the way. I saw it.
Right. He's totally healthy.
Right.
And my husband and I continued to visit him. We were permitted to see him with hospital security.
In the NICU?
Yes.
Okay.
And I spent 6-7 hours at a time with him in between running around and picking up medical records and letters from doctors and printing out photographs and making copies of things, talking to attorneys. I spent as much time with my baby as possible, and he was perfect every single time I saw him. The last time I saw him before the court date was July 12th. I left the NICU around 9:30 p.m., and I have a photograph of him that is dated and time-stamped 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
As I was walking into the courthouse, I received a phone call from the NICU telling me that my healthy, drug-free baby overnight had suddenly started experiencing withdrawal symptoms and that they were going to put him on methadone.
Well, I'm a little confused. I saw the report that said the baby tested negative.
I saw it.
Now, by the way, I'm no doctor, but from what I've read, placenta can protect babies from certain drugs, from things. I mean, it's possible that, you know, there's babies born that don't contract AIDS when mom had AIDS. It's all possible.
Right.
And I don't know if that's what happened here, but if you're taking the prescribed medicine, I'm assuming the doctor doesn't want your baby born on oxycodone.
Right.
So I assume he knows what he's doing.
Right.
So all of a sudden, and again, it'd be nice to get a doctor in here to talk about it, but methadone is what you put people on to get you off oxycodone? I don't understand that whole thing.
It was hydrocodone,
too. Hydrocodone, it was
5 milligrams of hydrocodone,
right,
which is the lowest possible dose.
Is that equivalent to methadone or heroin or something?
Absolutely not.
It doesn't seem like it.
Absolutely not. But
I'll tell you else something I thought about on this when I read all this stuff. Because I've worked with the greatest people in the business, and I've worked with the biggest idiots. I don't know how they can get out of bed and brush their teeth in the morning, right? And I hear a lot of incompetency in this story, possible incompetency. You know, one possible thing is they literally get the paperwork mixed up and says, you know, this baby is the methadone baby. Oh, no, it's a baby over here near the crib. Mm. I mean, how often do they cut off the wrong arm?
Right.
How often do they give the baby to the wrong mom? This happens, right? So, again, Megan, I'm sorry I'm talking too much, but this pisses me off. The whole thing pisses me off.
No, trust me. And I told them on the phone, I said, no, I'm completely against that. I'm refusing that treatment.
Right.
And they told me I did not have that right.
Yeah, I would guess at that point you might not have.
Well, my parental rights have, I mean, still to this day have not been terminated. I still have parental rights and
medical
rights to my child. But I was told I didn't have any say-so.
All right,
about
so you're leaving the NICU at 9:30. You get this terrible information. Now you're in court the next day, morning. What happens?
I walk into court, and my husband and I sat there from 8:30 in the morning until about 4:15.
That's common.
When we were finally brought in, and prior to being brought in, my court-appointed attorney showed me the juvenile dependency petition. And so for the first time, I was reading what the allegations were.
Right. And you, do you have that here?
And I'm horrified.
You want to read?
Actually,
well,
you
let's
have
see
it.
If we can pull
yeah,
it up. All right, let's see.
On the...
So we'll pull this, I think. Is it this one?
That's
the
first page, yeah.
Right, let's pull this up and see if we can make this work. The magic of Hollywood. Oh, my gosh, I did it. I can't believe it. Right. Now, this might be hard to read, but you could read it out loud off of your copy if you want, or we could talk about it. But
sure.
These are the allegations against you, which apparently they discovered in your home that they never visited. Am I correct? This is the logic here so far?
In this page, they don't mention the home. It's in the later pages of this where they claim that, yes, they went to my home. But they never actually mention what the home looked like. So they said that they went to my home, but there's no mention of anything about my home because they were never there.
So we got this up on the screen. And then if you want to go through and kind of now these words are highlighted in yellow. And there's another punchline we're going to throw at you guys in a minute. And I'll tell you why it's highlighted in yellow. But... And by the way, this is a live video, but it's also a podcast. So we have to kind of describe what we're seeing. So go ahead and read some of those allegations against you.
What they accused me of.
You weren't told this in the hospital. You were told this in court.
Right. I had no idea what the actual allegations were prior to walking into the courtroom that day. But they claimed that I had a history of substance abuse, including alcohol, and that I was a current abuser of prescription medication and marijuana, which rendered me unable to provide regular care and supervision of my children. They said the mother abused marijuana and prescription medication during the mother's pregnancy with the child and had a positive toxicology screen for marijuana and opiates on 7/8/2016 at the child's birth. The children are of such a young age, requiring constant care and supervision, and the mother's substance abuse interferes with providing regular care and supervision of the children. And then they go on to include my husband, saying that because he knew of my alleged substance abuse, that he failed to protect the child, and that failure to protect endangered the children's physical health and safety and placed the children at risk of serious physical harm and damage and failure to protect.
All right. All sounds bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, just so everybody's clear on this, allegedly they discovered these things in your home because I don't know
because they claim that they went to my home, right?
And I'm not sure how they got all that from.
Right. How could they say that I was unable to provide regular care? DCFS actually has a definition of what regular care is. Regular care is food, clothing, shelter, medical care, and schooling. So it's not like none of this is subjective. There are very clear definitions for what care is. Right.
So I just want the readers to understand that, again, let's go backwards to that report that says baby's got no positive drug test. They did not interview her in the home, as she's going to read here in a second, that said she did. And those allegations, which are highlighted in yellow, we're going to tell you about in a second, those allegations are kind of, you know, probable cause. It's what matches the code. It's what defines child neglect.
This language is what enables them to get that removal order and to get, because this...
Which, if were true, would be perfectly okay.
What's on this paper is taken prima facie, which means at face value. The county needs no evidence. They show the judge this, and that's what...
Okay, what else we got on there?
And then they also claimed that I had a history of mental and emotional problems, including a diagnosis of bipolar 1, depression, anxiety, which rendered me incapable of providing regular care and supervision of the children. They also said, on prior occasions, the mother was involuntarily hospitalized for the evaluation and treatment of the mother's psychiatric condition. The mother failed to take the mother's psychotropic medication as prescribed. Such mental and emotional condition on the part of the mother endangers the children's physical health and safety and places the children at risk of serious physical harm and damage.
Now that all sounds pretty bad.
It sounds terrible.
And these seem to be the best social workers I've ever seen that can surmise all this. Meeting me in the hospital for 1.5 days.
While I was hooked up to IVs.
1.5 days. And again, just to clarify, because it's a hard story to follow, they never came to your house after the hospital.
No.
Prior to the hearing.
No.
Okay.
And the other thing is I was never involuntarily hospitalized in my life.
Okay.
I was not prescribed any psychotropic medication.
Could they run you for, you've never been arrested.
No.
And these are legal medications.
Yes.
All right. So far I'm not liking the story. We're going to know why this is getting worse rather than better in a second. And now let's read the part about the...
it says in their
where
official,
they came to your home and came to your home and all that stuff. That's the
in their official the delivered service logs. Let me just find that. It says on 7/10/2016 at 12:30 p.m., the emergency response social worker arrived at Kaiser Permanente South Bay. It says right there, yeah. Arrived at the hospital to serve the mother and Ibrahim's father with the removal order. The social worker spoke with the mother's nurse, who stated that the mother believed she and baby boy Ibrahim would be discharged together. The nurse reported she was able to obtain a urine sample from the newborn and it would be submitted for a toxicology screen. The nurse requested for a security guard to stand by while the social worker spoke with the mother and took the newborn out of the room into the NICU.
Now, did any of that happen? Was there a security guard there? The cops showed up, but I don't remember you saying there
was a security guard. The cops showed up later. I believe there was hospital security that stayed in the hallway.
All right.
They never actually, I don't think, came into the room. And then it continues to say the ER, emergency response social worker, met with the mother in her home, and the mother became visibly agitated when she saw child social worker. The mother asked, "Why are you here?" And CSW explained that she was there to provide her with an update regarding the removal order request. The mother said, "What are you talking about? You never said anything about that." And then it continues to talk about how she explains the removal order, how she also requested to find out where my older son was. And then at the end, it says, I asked her to leave the room.
Yeah. Well, that was true. I think you said that.
Yes.
Well, one thing's true anyway. Isn't that fabulous? Okay.
But it says right here, and these are their official, these delivered service logs, if it's not written here, basically it didn't happen. Right. And if it is written here, it needs to be factual.
So I read, is that 15 pages or 10 pages? It was a bunch of pages.
I read a lot of stuff.
Yes. I read it, okay? And I'm pretty good at reading reports and going, okay, that sounds good. And when I read this and you told me you were in the hospital, not in your house, here's what I started thinking. We called it bootstrapping, right? Where you come up with a conclusion first and then you go out and you find evidence to make the case. It's reverse what you're supposed to do. And it would be bootstrapping if they thought you were a drug addict and then went to your house and found a thing of marijuana or something. And your neighbor said, oh, I think she took aspirin twice, but if they don't go to the house, this can't be bootstrapping. Then I thought to myself, I wonder if that's boilerplate, right? Because I used to see this on the job where people would have a burglary report. I came to blank this address, and I talked to blank this person, and his car, blank, a Toyota, was that. And they just typed in or filled in a report because it's the same report over and over again.
Right.
And we started talking about this, and I said, you got to go find some evidence on that. Is it possible that this is a carbon copy, filled out ahead of time report? And I've
100%.
Seen this happen. And it turns out it is.
Yes.
Right? So now we have the second graphic, and that was from another...
completely different person.
Different person. And we're
different,
not gonna,
different part of...
Yeah, we're not going to say where we got it from, but it's another case in their jurisdiction, right? All right, now let me pull up that graphic. Let's see if I can get that. It was... This one here, right?
Yes.
All right, let me push this up. All right, now.
Everything that is highlighted on what you're seeing on the screen right now.
So we're looking at the document for my podcast listeners, and this is a well, it's the same form.
It's the same form.
Same county, what's that county form called?
It's called the JV-121.
All right, so we got a JV-121, and I read this, and verbatim,
yes,
it's the same language throughout, not 7/8 of the document, but a lot of places where this is the boilerplate, and then they fill in some facts underneath that boilerplate, and another paragraph's boilerplate, and they fill in some facts after that. So it's clear to me, and you've told me, and I'm going to believe you, that you've seen other reports like this mm-hmm. through your attorney cases,
yep.
and that these things get filled out ahead of time, and then just kind of rubber stamp and say, okay, well, you know.
Now, they have figured out what language
yeah.
will get the removal order sustained, will get the detention sustained. They have figured out what it needs to say, and they simply change the name, change the dates, change the drug, change the alleged mental diagnosis.
Yeah, and all this language is verbatim. Anything mm-hmm. in yellow you're seeing on the screen
everything
now
in
is
yellow
verbatim
that's on
to
the
your
screen.
Report, and this is not your report. This is somebody else's.
That is somebody else's report.
Whew, listen, I don't know. I got to tell you, I know these things have happened. I've seen these things happen in police work. It was more because you're super busy and it wasn't any evil behind it. I'm just right. going to fill out a burglary for motor vehicle report and put the people's name. You know, it's all good. But when you're taking somebody's kid out of their
right.
home.
Or the hospital.
I mean, this is some serious stuff. And for them to just, you know, have a form filled out ahead of time. And by the way, back in the day, we did all this with pencil and paper. And you didn't go home until that report was done. So mm-hmm. now you're out of there on the 10th. They got to be in court 3 days later.
Mm-hmm.
They got to have all this paperwork done and filled out ahead of time. It takes a long time, especially if they have 4 or 5 cases, right? And sometimes they do these things to make it all faster.
Right.
But that doesn't make it all better and legal, right? Mm-hmm. And this piqued my interest. And then I started doing some research on all these different websites, and I found that this seems to be not only a practice here in L.A. County, but around the country.
Oh, the whole country.
A lot of this stuff is going on, yeah. And medical kidnappings in turn. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought court would end it. I thought it would all end.
Yeah, so
on
let's
July
get back to court.
13th.
So you're getting there. Now you have all these paperwork that you didn't see before, and you're going, what?
I'm looking at the
what?
Allegations.
Came
and
to my
I'm
house,
saying,
what? You know.
I'm saying, rendered unable to provide care, involuntarily hospitalized. I'm freaking out.
Right. So that's probably – and that language matched the same document we just saw with the other lady.
Yeah, 100%.
So if you don't put that language in there, what you have is Lori is in the hospital and a doctor gave her prescription drugs.
Right,
and
she tested positive. And I know some people might say, oh, THC, marijuana. Same medication was prescribed to me for nausea and sleep with my first son. 100% healthy. Most beautiful, intelligent, sweet, happy child on the earth.
Well, and some people would say.
And the doctor said it was safer than Zofran and other medications that are freely given to pregnant women.
Listen, my mother, bless her heart, drank and smoked when I was pregnant, and I was a forceps baby. That explains a lot of things, okay? So it's each his own, right? And I'm not passing judgment.
Right.
You know, my kids, we didn't take aspirin. That's just our choice.
Right.
But it's when they used to actually smoke and drink when people were pregnant and thought it was good for you.
Right.
I mean, you know, things change.
My parents smoked cigarettes when we were babies in the car with the windows rolled
up.
I know,
we're all still alive. But
I was born in the 70s,
okay,
so
yeah.
It's like, yeah.
But we could still have people have a fair comment here that says, you know what, Lori?
Sure.
Shame
on you. They don't agree with that.
Shame on you.
But they were never talking
mom.
About that. They were focused on the opiate, and they just kept saying opiate, 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 because that let them, you know, well, opiate could be anything. Opiate could be heroin.
Right.
Opiate could be methadone.
Well, it's a broad
term.
And they should
right.
use a specific type of
and
drug.
And they never have.
All right, so you're in court. Now you're going, what the heck is all this stuff? What do I do about it? And what happens?
And I'm thinking that, okay, I'm going to walk into this room, and my court-appointed attorney is going to make sure that the commissioner sees
why
all of this
why was
evidence.
The court-appointed, by the way?
Why did I have a court appointment?
I mean, you couldn't afford your own private
Not
life.
At that moment, no.
Oh,
we
fair.
Only had 3 days to run around.
All right, fair enough. Okay.
I truly thought, I mean, you have to think about this. I'm thinking of this from the perspective of someone who had been a successful, amazing parent for 5 years, who won full
teacher.
Custody and a teacher. My
Which doesn't
care
mean
of
you can't
children,
be a bad teacher. And, you know, I mean, so when people want to pass a moral judgment on this, all I care about is I got documents I'm looking at that have boilerplate language on them, and that's mm-hmm. not right. All right, so at a minimum, that's not right, okay?
Right.
So you think this attorney, now, by the way, and again, Megan, I'm sorry I'm talking, but that's why it's called a talk show. Do you have to, at this point, think that you're being charged with something? What's the attorney telling you? You're up for charges, or what is it?
She really didn't tell me a whole lot, to be honest. the attorney for the county, they call them county counsel, sat there and made her allegations, and she claimed that my son, because the wording in my allegations, it's a little confusing if you read it quickly, and if you weren't a very good reader, you might think that it said that my baby tested positive for
right.
those substances. So it was told to the court that my baby was positive, that he was born in a medically fragile condition and needed methadone.
So they're claiming in their written report, just which is almost like a verbal testimony, right? And by the way, it's, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I was a policeman, and I'm still licensed to be a policeman, so maybe I can say this with my post certificate. That's hearsay.
Oh, absolutely.
That, oh, I was told by a nurse that the baby tested positive. That's like complete hearsay.
Oh, they had no evidence. The county had no evidence whatsoever.
The document that says, here's the report that says they tested positive. Right. That's what you would do. They didn't do that.
No, they had, the county didn't show any evidence whatsoever. They just said, baby tested positive, mom tested positive, mom's been involuntarily, and I'm sitting there saying, no, I was not allowed to speak, first of all. Second of all, this quote-unquote detention hearing was over in about 60 seconds.
What?
Literally, I was not able to talk. I was not allowed to talk.
Well, I could see you not talking, but was your attorney allowed to talk?
Well, when they said baby is positive, I was handing her, I was saying, here's my baby's negative drug screen. And she did sort of half-heartedly say, oh, Your Honor, you know, mother's saying she has the baby's drug screen here and that it's negative. And the commissioner just sneered at me and said, you're trying to tell me that the mother was positive for this and the baby wasn't? And I'm standing there like, yes, that's
well,
what
if
I'm,
the hospital says
I have
so,
it in my hand.
Go to medical school if you don't like it, but that's what it says. And they wouldn't let you admit that as evidence.
Nothing got admitted as evidence. Not one piece of, not my photographs of my house, not the evidence of my 15 years of teaching, not the evidence of my first son's medical history, nothing, not one piece. And whoosh, the whole thing was sustained. They ignored my husband. My husband was there too. And it was decided that the baby was going to stay in the hospital because now he's on methadone. So now he has to be, you know, put through this.
Right.
They took a healthy baby and they drugged him and they made him go on something that he needed to withdraw from.
Now, I got to say, somebody's going to watch this and say, you're a conspiracy theory whack job.
It's all on paper. I have it all in black and white.
I did read the document that says they tested negative, so we could have a lot of...
And not only tested negative, because some doctors will say, oh, maybe a baby can test negative, but then they still exhibit signs of withdrawal. Every single one of my son's medical exams shows a healthy, vigorous, well-appearing infant, normal muscle tone, normal breath, normal everything. No high-pitched scream, no irritability. You think of a baby withdrawing and you think, you know, they're having trouble breathing or they're screaming or they're this. No, my baby was completely perfect.
The order to remove your child is sustained.
And to keep him detained was sustained.
Still in the hospital. He's still in the NICU.
Okay. And my older son was with his paternal family. And that's where he stayed.
And he did stay.
Even though he's never lived there, ever.
Okay. Now, what happens after this?
After that, we were told we had another hearing. It was called a pre-release investigation for later in the month of July. And what they were going to determine was whether or not they would release our newborn to my husband.
Okay.
So the county had some demands in order for that to take place. They demanded that I leave my home, that I no longer live in my home, that my husband bring in a full-time babysitter, that they be fingerprinted, you know, and their criminal history checked.
Well, at least they're doing that.
Of course. And my husband was fingerprinted. My husband submitted to a voluntary drug test, which was negative for everything. Finally, for the first time since anything, a social worker came out. She was actually called the dependency investigator.
And, you know, how many days after the court hearing was this, roughly?
Couple weeks.
It took that long to come out your house?
Oh, yeah.
And now is your baby still in the NICU this whole time?
My baby was in the NICU until July 25th, I believe.
And you could still visit at that point?
Once the detention was upheld by the juvenile court on July 13th, we were told the fall, because we went and saw him after the court hearing.
Right.
But the next day, when we called to say, okay, we're coming over, because the typical practice had been for us, we called the security guards, let them know we were coming. They had a security guard ready to meet us. They walked us up to the NICU. We spent time with our baby. After DCFS upheld the detention, we were told that we were no longer allowed to visit our baby with armed hospital security, that it had to be instead a DCFS monitored, approved monitor. So I'm not sure if anybody is aware of this, but anything government related moves at a snail's pace.
Yeah, it's true.
So I immediately gave them names of people to recommend, you know, as monitors, you know, begged for a social worker or anyone to help me go visit my baby. And this took, I have very good records of all of this, but off the top of my head, I'm not sure how many days it was, but it was several days until we saw him again.
All right. What happens next?
The PRI, the pre-release investigation, was conducted. I was out of the home. My husband had a full-time babysitter there. Our home, of course, checked out fine. There were no issues with our home. There were no issues with my husband. There were no issues with the prospective babysitter.
And you got a report on that from them that says
right,
everything's okie-dokie. Okay.
Yes. But the problem was that my husband did not believe the allegations against me. So therefore, the Department of Children and Family Services was concerned that he would not protect our newborn from me if he did not understand why the department was involved with his life.
Okay.
So they
protect
claimed,
you from taking minutes that you don't have to take anymore, or what's the?
They just protect. They were afraid that he wouldn't protect the baby from me because, well, I guess I was supposed to be a danger.
Now, what's interesting about this, if you think about it, is the second person that came out is not the person that came to your house. I mean, came. Well, she didn't come to your house. It's not the person
hospital.
From the hospital, right?
No, the person who came to the hospital and basically, for all intents and purposes, kidnapped my baby from my room. She never came to my home ever.
The lady that came to your home is working off her report.
Exactly.
And looking for all these terrible things.
Yes.
And so she has to say, well, you know, these terrible things, and your husband's not believing any of it. Now, she's not seeing it happen in real time.
Right.
Because it's a bunch of hooey, you know, based on what you're saying. So I could see her not being involved per se, just doing her job. I got this report that says these things are terrible. And what do you think about that, husband?
But her job is to conduct an independent investigation. That is
the DI's. She has a separate function.
She is supposed to conduct a completely separate investigation.
And
once
not,
the detention has been upheld,
yeah,
she is supposed to go out and interview collateral contacts, check the home. She is supposed to conduct a brand new... Well, there was no investigation completed
right. So
to begin
not,
with.
She's not concurring with the first lady's report,
it's
basically.
Supposed to be...
Who came to your house but didn't come to your house.
Right. It's
right.
supposed to be a completely independent investigation.
Right.
But what I have learned and what has been confirmed by former employees of the county and many, many other cases is that DCFS speaks with one voice. So whatever the initial allegation is, every report that follows better support those allegations. Anything exculpatory or in favor of the parent, they try to squash that and hide
it. Now, what's interesting about that, and I don't know this as a lawyer. I know this as a police officer. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm licensed, got my post, is that as a police officer, I am compelled to gather all evidence.
Right.
And that means exculpatory, meaning here's evidence that says you didn't do it.
Right.
And the evidence over here that says you may have done it or probably did do it. And you know what? It's for a jury to take all that stuff and say, you know what? So my job is just to gather the facts. And I am not to pass judgment on what happened. I'm just gathering actual facts.
Right.
I'm guessing they are required to do the same thing. And if they have a videotape, you know, that you just got the Mother of the Year award and you have a drug test every day and everything's fine and they don't put that in,
right?
They got a problem with that.
Right.
Right. And I'm going to assume that that's not good for them to do to the court. So what you're telling me is consistent with people writing bad reports.
Yes.
Right. That does happen. But police officers are compelled under all kinds of rules and testifying rules and evidence that, you know, that doesn't really happen like it used to happen back in the day. And sometimes you don't think something's exculpatory. You just think it's important. Now policemen put everything in a report and let somebody else decide it, right? So far what you're telling me sounds, I don't want to say normal. It does sound procedural. So they're following their own procedures. But if she's going to write something that contradicts the first person that came to, that didn't come to your home, by the way, that would be problematic.
Oh, absolutely.
For everybody.
Oh,
right?
Definitely.
And are we saying she's lying? I don't know. You know,
you don't have to say it. I'll say it.
Well,
she's lying.
Well,
they've lied in every report they've submitted to the court under penalty of perjury.
Yeah, the problem is with bootstrapping. If the first social worker writes that she came to your house and all these things, and she didn't, right? That sets the independent person's mind to go look for it, right? And you're going to find things to match that. And she's not finding things to match it. And by the way, if she was, that report wouldn't have all these yellows that match, you know, this boilerplate stuff. All right, so, you know, we're a little long, but I want to, it's 8 o'clock, but I want to go long on this, and let's just keep going and, you know, see if we can get the whole story in today. And of course, you're welcome to come back and talk about some more.
Lots I mean, I'm really interested in hearing from, you know, your viewers and anybody who will see this or hear this, for them to contact you with their own stories, because I know that I'm not the only parent in this county.
Yeah, when I read all the stuff on the internet, it happens all around the country.
Yeah.
And medical kidnapping is the term, which I'd never heard before.
Yeah. Well, and what happens is because the states are actually incentivized to remove as many children as possible from the homes. That's where they get their funding. The Adoption Safe Families Act of 1997 federally incentivized states to rush adoptions. It was under the guise of, oh, we're promoting permanency so the children aren't languishing in foster care. What it has now done is propelled these workers into taking as many babies and young children as possible, rushing them into adoptions, because then there's bonus money involved for the state. And
let's talk about that. So, yeah. I mean, not to cut you off, but let's fast forward your story. Basically, it's 9 months later. Yeah, still don't have your child
back. It took
back.
Us 8 months to have our first real trial.
From the time the first court appearance, you had to wait 8 months. And the whole time the child then gets transferred to a foster home.
He's been in 4 foster homes.
What?
Yes. 4.
Whew, man. And have you been able to visit your son the whole time?
I get to see my now 9-month-old infant for 2 hours, 2 times a week at a foster family agency with a medical social worker monitoring.
Not in their home, but in the agency.
He's my 9-month-old has never been to my home ever.
No. I mean, you don't go to the foster parents' home. You
make I don't even know the foster people's names. I have no contact with them.
Oh, you just they bring them to the social office or whatever. Okay.
And I see my 5-year-old. I was seeing him in the DCFS office. Then I was seeing him just at his grandmother's house or at the park or at the playground. And then I recently went 3 weeks without seeing him at all. I was being denied visitation for no reason. But I just finally saw him yesterday. So I have very minimal visits. And my 2 boys have not seen each other since August of last year, which again is also illegal. They're supposed to have sibling visitation. But when I say that the law has not been followed, there has been no due process, there has been no evidence whatsoever of any wrongdoing, any abuse, any neglect, nothing. I have been retaliated against for doing things like this because when this first happened, I shouted it from the rooftops. I wrote to every news station. I called. I did interviews. I did as much as I could because my children were kidnapped. And the court retaliated. The court told me to get off Facebook, to basically gag myself, that I was not allowed to exercise my First Amendment right and speak to the press, which I am. The DA's office has told me I am allowed to speak to the media.
I would think so.
I am. Yeah. But they use intimidation tactics to keep parents quiet because they don't want this getting out, what's happening. And many parents comply out of fear. And it also, it's worse than having a scarlet letter on your forehead. If you're someone that's had your children removed, the general consensus is you must have done something.
Yeah.
They don't want to take children.
So let's change this up a little bit. I'm going to put my number up here. So I want you guys to write me if you have a similar story, and we'll have you on and talk about this. And write me at chuck@securityguy.tv. So it's chuck@securityguy.tv. So I was talking to people about this, and some people on Facebook text me and says, this goes on more. Do you think about it? And there's things you don't know. And I'm intrigued by the whole thing, right? And I have an open mind about it. You could have gone down and created all these documents and have a great big hoax. And you know what? Shame on me. But it all sounds believable. Here's why it's believable to me. And again, Megan, I'm sorry I'm talking too much. Where do you find child molesters? Do you find them on a Chevron oil rig in the middle of the ocean?
No, you find them in schools.
You find them in schools.
And
you find
churches.
Them in church, where there's kids, right?
Yeah, they could be your son's soccer coach. I mean, who knows? It's usually someone close to you.
Yeah, and we have a really big problem in LA especially and worldwide. And I did a show recently on this human trafficking. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw that, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to get involved in human trafficking, where are you going to find kids?
Foster care.
That's one aspect, because what doesn't happen, like people think, is that a van doesn't pull up and some pedophile takes a kid and steals them. Child kidnapping in that sense, or enslavement, so to speak, right? That's less of a pedophile crime and more of a, you know, somebody that wants to own some property and you can say by definition you're a pedophile if you abuse a child sexually, but that's not necessarily motivation. There are different aspects there, right? So if you're going to try and get a kid, why not just take it inside the system?
Right.
And people say, well, that's not possible. They would never do that.
Oh, yes.
Well, haven't
do.
We seen cases in LA where, and I don't remember the whole case, but we can look it up, where there's a woman making $60,000 a month as a mm-hmm. foster mother, and she had like 10 kids or whatever it was.
Yep.
But my mom had seven, and sometimes they say seven's too many, so we got to take some kids out of the house, but they'll give it to a foster parent and give her $60,000 a month. So there's some money here, right? So there's motivation behind making money.
The Los Angeles County Department of Children and Family Services has an annual budget of over $2
billion. $2
billion? Billion with a B a year. But everyone out there thinks that they're poor and they need money, because when they let children die in abusive homes or...
This happens quite a bit. We see it more and more.
They
try to cover it up, but it comes out.
Then they claim, well, we're overworked and underpaid.
Right. That's why they do boilerplate pre-written reports, right?
Every social worker that has been on my case makes over $100,000 a year.
Oh, now tell us about that. Because
you can look their salaries up online.
I did. I found that. That was interesting. Why is it public, I wonder?
Because they're government employees.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they're making $100,000 a year.
Minimum, most of them.
Right.
The county council in my courtroom makes $250,000 a year.
So if I was going to start a child stealing ring, kidnapping ring, for profit, I would do just this. I'd make a report. I'd send a foster kid to my best friend that nobody knows about, and they're a foster parent, and they get $60,000 a year for 10 kids. And
they get
it
even
them.
More if the child is put on psychotropic medications.
Right.
And they have doctors now putting infants on psych meds, infants less than a year old.
So I don't want to go conspiracy theory on this, but I think this is plausible, and there are a lot of people that write very similar things all around the country. Now, we can say, and a lot of my police officer friends will say, and rightfully so, that, that's just bad parenting, and we've all seen bad parents as cops, and some people should probably have a license, and I say, okay. So there are absolutely people that should not have children, but do you legislate that? Do you make it a law? If you start going down that slippery slope, we have a whole nother problem, right? And we step in criminally and say, we're putting you in jail, and we'll put this kid hopefully in a good foster home or adoption.
Or with family.
Family's the first
family.
Thing.
Now, family should be the first
the
thing.
The first thing I used to do when I took a kid out of the home is I say, who's your sister? Who's your mother? Who's the grandmother? And that's what we did. We found that person to go with. And what you're saying is that's kind of not the thing now. They're getting them into the foster system.
No, because there's more money for them in the foster system. And then there's so many revenue streams because they kind of have a cookie cutter case plan for every single parent, regardless of the allegations, regardless of the family's needs. They make every single parent drug test and take parenting classes and go for counseling and have a psych evaluation.
The parents have to pay for that.
It depends. It depends. Some services are free. Some services are covered by parents' insurance. But many times it is out of pocket for parents. Yeah.
Very interesting. All right. So what I've read, reviewed, looked at, I think there's something here. I think at minimum, the boilerplate language that appears in the two documents I saw, and I'm going to take your word for it, that you looked at other documents that your lawyer has, and with the parents' names blocked out and stuff, but it's the same language in all kinds of cases.
And to clarify, when you say lawyer now, after those first two court appearances, we did retain private attorneys.
Okay, good.
If we had had the court-appointed attorney for the rest of it, we would have lost immediately.
Yeah.
They would have gone forward with the trial, but as soon as we substituted our private attorneys in, that's when they pushed the trial off and they've kept refusing us the trial.
All right.
So, because they knew they couldn't railroad us any longer. And because I was being so verbal and so vocal, they basically retaliated and withheld the trial for 8 months. So
my summary and my thoughts on it, and let me put up my graphic one more time here so we can get people to write, email us, you know, about this if they want to. Okay, let's see. Sorry. So, you know, I almost had a perfect broadcast without the pause, but I screwed it up. All right. So there's my email address, chuck@securityguide.tv. Here's my takeaway. I read a bunch of documents, looked at a bunch of stuff. I see some boilerplate language. I see the exact same language. That's not even possible because not every case is the same. However, putting the language in that rises to the level of the probable cause, right, need to remove a child, is what you do if you're an incompetent nincompoop and can't write your own report, or if your motivation is, we don't care about that part of it, we just care about getting as many kids as we can.
Absolutely.
So that's plausible. At minimum, let's forget about conspiracies. Let's forget about them trying to make money off kids. Let's forget all that stuff, right? At minimum, what I'm seeing are a bunch of morons, lazy morons that do boilerplate language and they're sloppy and they don't even know. They say they're in the home and they're in the hospital. It's a mess.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody in L.A. County, and we have a lot of cops that listen, we have judges that listen, we have all kinds of people that listen, they should look at that part. So I'm going to throw out everything else you said, and I'm still going to go, I read documents that have the same language, and apparently every single mom or dad sometimes, right, in L.A. County is a psychotic drug addict that has an unsafe home. You know, all that language you just read, right? The boilerplate that rise to the level of the code. And I think we need to look at it just on that. And I think that's reasonable.
And they dropped, you know, my drug allegations.
Well, you're not in jail. I mean,
they dismissed the substance abuse allegation. They fixed the word involuntarily in the mental health allegation.
Right.
But they sustained the mental health allegation. And the reasons that were given to the court for sustaining that, the first reason was, allegedly, my older son's father requested that his address remain confidential. The county council used that on the record. I used to live at that address. I have picked my son up from that address over the last 5 years, more times than I can count. I was just at that address yesterday. There is no way that these people requested, that the paternal family requested this address to be confidential, because it's ludicrous. I know this address. The other reasons that were given was that I have argued, that I have asserted my innocence, that I have been, I've spoken to the media, and this apparently is for some reason sustaining that I am rendered unable to provide care for my children due to mental health.
You know, I'm going to play devil's advocate and say, you know what, Lori, I don't believe you,
okay,
and you're a bad mom. But I still read documents that have boilerplate pre-written language in it, and you know, they didn't come to your house. They did it in the hospital. So
right.
I hope people look at this objectively and read out things that are debatable.
Right.
And just look at facts and say, you know, something's wrong here. You know, something's really going on. So if you guys have similar cases like this, write me at chuck@securityguide.tv. That's chuck@securityguide.tv. Lori, I want to have you on again.
Okay.
There's a lot more layers to this story, but I think right now that's a good takeaway for people to say, hey, you know, let's stop here and absorb all this, because it's a lot to absorb. And keep in mind that if we go to that medicalkidnap.com, not your website, your story
but my story is on there,
more detail.
Yes.
And a lot of other people.
Oh, so many.
A lot of other people. All around the country. Yeah. Yeah. So I think we need to have this looked at, and I hope people watching involved in, you know, the judicial side or law enforcement investigators, I hope somebody picks up and says, you know what, I'm going to take a look at it. Let's go look at these documents. And I think you and I might go down to court and see if we can pull some of these things and find some more matches with this language on it and see what happens.
Absolutely.
All right. Excellent. So, Lori, thanks for coming on Security Guy Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been really very interesting. And you guys can tune in every week to SecurityGuyTV.com. It's our new address on Livestream. Of course, we're still on SoundCloud with our 349 or 50 other shows, because people watching on live stream say, hey, he's got five shows. There's 350 out there already before live stream. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed talking to you. I think this is going to be something we can, you know, get people to pay attention to. And just on the minimum part of saying something smells, we got to look at it. I think people ought to do that. I think that'll happen. So thanks for coming on Security Guy TV. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.